This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. An American icon makes its debut Thursday in the annual Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Mr. Monopoly, the man in the tuxedo and top hat, will float through the event with his money bag in hand. Monopoly, the board game, is played by more people than any other game. As part of the series Present at the Creation, NPR senior correspondent Juan Williams reports that the ultimate game of capitalism has come a long way from its humble roots.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like everyone to please find their seats. There are various tables. Please find your seats at this time. Thank you.
Here in Lower Manhattan, near Wall Street, 800 people are gathered for a high-stakes game of Monopoly. It's sponsored by New York University's Real Estate Institute graduate program. The players include real-life real estate barons who play Monopoly with some of the most valuable real estate in the world, New York City real estate. A few years ago, Donald Trump joined in the game.
225? 225. Oh, Lord, I keep giving out money. You go.
The tournament is organized by Grace Greenwich.
Well, I think they enjoy the negotiation, the wheeling and dealing, and trying to get that other property. It makes something fun of their everyday work. So I think that's why they enjoy it.
Two high-ranking officials with Moody's Real Estate Finance Group are watching the games with the eyes of professionals, Lisa Bates Moss and John Chris.
I'm a buy and sell kind of girl, all day long.
Well, you stay until the end, because even if you're down to your last $10, you never know when the next roll of the dice will bring you. It's not over till it's over.
One thing that Moss and Chris did not know was that Monopoly was created as a cautionary exercise to make Americans aware of the excesses of capitalism. The game was created in the late 1800s and first patented in 1904 by Elizabeth McGee, who called it the landlord's game. Accounts of the game's origins differ. In one widely circulated version, McGee was a Quaker from Arlington, Virginia, who created it to promote a radical economic theory called the single tax that would only tax wealthy landowners, not workers. In McGee's first version of the game, the space now called Go was called Mother Earth. She calls some of the properties Easy Street and Lonely Lane. McGee took the game to the man she called the King of Games, George Parker of Parker Brothers. But he rejected it, saying the game was too complicated and too long. Phil Orbanes is the author of The Monopoly Companion.
Up until that point, almost every game started and stopped on particular spaces. When they looked at her game in 1922, they had a hard time picturing when the game would end. Also, the fact that you were dealing with terms like mortgages and interest and taxes were considered to be too unfriendly to the average game player, and they did not feel that the game would have a large audience.
But McGee's game did catch on in the economics departments of a few eastern colleges, such as Princeton and Haverford. There, a key change was made that transformed the landlord's game into Monopoly. The students formed adjoining properties into groups. That allowed higher rents to be charged when one player owned a group of properties, a monopoly. The students also began to build on properties, further increasing the rents. Monopoly had become an exercise in capitalism and the joy of bankrupting your opponents. But it still had only a limited following, until an unemployed radiator repairman named Charles Darrow got a hold of it. Phil Orbanes.
He plays it. He apparently fell in love with it and played it with other friends. At first, he would just use oilcloth that he bought from a hardware store, and he would fabricate the houses and hotels from scraps of wood molding, and he would use his typewriter to actually make by hand each title deed and chance and community chess card.
Wherever Monopoly was played, people named the properties after local streets. Darrow lived in Philadelphia. The first game he played came from Atlantic City and had properties named Park Place and Boardwalk. The game had no trinkets to represent each player, so Darrow suggested common household items, thimbles, buttons, and coins. Darrow began selling copies of his version of Monopoly to Philadelphia's major department store, John Wanamaker's. The game was such a hit that 500 copies sold out quickly, and a new executive at Parker Brothers, Robert Barton, realized the game might have more potential than anyone had thought. Historian Phil Orbanes.
It dawned on him that if this game, no matter how complicated it was, no matter how many rules it broke, if this game was selling in the heart of the Depression, it had potential. And they struck a deal with Darrow to take it over.
It was an immediate success. In 1935, Parker Brothers sold 500,000 copies. They could not keep up with the demand and had to keep their presses running 24 hours a day. The next year, a staggering 3 million copies were sold in the United States.
America was starved for money, and through the form of this game, they could, for the period of 3 hours or so, feel like they were rich. They were able to actually handle money. They were able to buy property. My goodness, almost no one during that period of time could dream of owning property, being, you know, unemployed and whatnot. People just embraced the game because it gave them a chance to feel like they were back in tall cotton again.
Parker Brothers publicized Darrow as the hero who created Monopoly. The idea of a poor man who became suddenly wealthy fit perfectly with the spirit of the game. As for Elizabeth McGee, who first introduced the board game, she gave up the rights to Monopoly when Parker Brothers agreed to publish 3 more of her board games. But McGee's original intent was not completely forgotten. It came back in 1974 in an unexpected way.
I had played Monopoly with my children, and my 8-year-old was the heroic winner.
Ralph Ansbach is an economics professor at San Francisco State University.
The next day, during the oil crisis, when the oil cartel was set up, I had come home from the university, and there had been a huge traffic jam mess, and I started cussing out the oil monopolists at the dinner table. And my 8-year-old got very upset with me, and he said, "Dad, you're just a poor sport. You're mad at me because I won that Monopoly game last night." Then I began to think about this, and I tried to find a game which would be just as much fun as Monopoly, but which would show the dark side of monopolies. And after some students challenged me at my university, I decided to fill the gap by creating a game which is against monopolists.
Ansbach called his game Anti-Monopoly. He wanted to teach players that monopolists are bad guys, he says. Parker Brothers sued. The case was eventually settled out of court. Under the deal, Parker Brothers retained their trademark, but Ansbach was allowed to sell his game. He says he sold more than 1 million copies of Anti-Monopoly.
Money! It's a crime. Share it, share it. Don't take a slice of my pie.
Ralph Ansbach isn't the only dad who's lost a Monopoly game to his son. I have too. So I asked historian Phil Orbanes for advice. He's been a judge at U.S. and World Monopoly Championships for 13 years.
Buy everything that you land on early in the game. You need trading material, most likely, in order to get a Monopoly. But the very best Monopolies to own, you ready for this one?
I'm anxiously awaiting
it. The oranges and the reds. They're reasonably priced, and most importantly, they get landed on the most of any color groups on the board. And the reason for that is actually very basic. It's because people get sent to jail often. And when they come out of jail, the most likely properties to land on are the oranges and the reds.
Monopoly's roots as anti-capitalist propaganda are never far from the game's identity. Even today, the game is banned in North Korea and Cuba. At one time, it was outlawed in Russia and China. Still, Monopoly continues to be the most played board game in the world, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. The game itself has become a commodity. Gilded sets made of dark wood and brass go for hundreds of dollars. Early versions of the game sell for as much as $8,000, and an original oilcloth board, made by hand before the game was published by Parker Brothers, went for $65,000. If Elizabeth McGee only knew. Juan Williams, NPR News.
Drawings of the original Landlord's Game are at npr.org.